Imagine that unbelievable new deck in your backyard. Outdoor Living Unlimited is Wisconsin's number one TimberTech deck builder. Building new decks and replacing old ones, creating that million-dollar feeling every time you relax in your own backyard. Looking for a company to make your backyard scream wow? Stop by Outdoor Living Unlimited's resourceful Waukesha showroom and visit OutdoorLivingUnlimited.com.
It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to another edition of WTMJ Outdoors. Always thanks to Outdoor Living Unlimited, who makes this all possible. And I thought, even though it's July in Wisconsin, and hopefully having a great summer, there's a big sport that happens in the snowier, colder times of the year. And I thought, let's talk to someone who actually knows what they're talking about. We're talking about snowmobiling in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Lori Heidemann, who runs the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobiles Club. Hi, Lori.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing good. It's kind of warm out, but
it is. Somewhat a weird time to talk about snowmobiling. But as we know, when you run an organization, it's a 24/7, 365 job sometimes. So tell me about your organization. What do you guys do? Who do you work with? And sort of what's your mission statement?
So our mission statement is to promote safe and responsible snowmobiling. We do a lot of positive publicity just so that we don't get a bad name. So one of the things that we do a lot of is we have a bunch of snowmobile safety instructors. And if you are born after 1-1 of 85, you have to take the class if you're between the age of 12 and 16. And you have to take the class in person. Once you reach 16, you have to take that class. You can take it in person or online. But that helps a lot with keeping our mission statement to promote safe and responsible snowmobiling. One of the things that we have is we have 588 clubs. They're all volunteer members. We maintain 25,000 miles of snowmobile trails,
wow,
which are open to the public. Of those 25,000 miles of snowmobile trails, 20,400 approximately are program funded, meaning that clubs take care of the other thousands of miles of trails, whether it's through fundraising or other means. All of our trails are interconnecting across the state. And so our membership is around 35,000, just over 35,000 families. And we have 1,498 commercial members, which are our restaurants, bar owners, things like that.
I want to ask you a dumb question. And we're going to get to all this stuff because I'm fascinated by this. And I love snowmobiling, first off, as somebody who lived in Wisconsin for a long time. Why do we call it a snowmobile, but like everywhere else calls it a snow machine? Why is that?
I'm not really sure.
Okay.
Although
I stumped you already.
Although Wisconsin does have, in the state statutes, a definition of a snowmobile.
Okay.
And so I don't know. Maybe that's why we use that term, because that's what it refers to in the state statute.
All right. So you're talking about all the trails that you sort of maintain and work with all these member clubs. 588 is like an amazing number. Has that number, the miles of trails, grown significantly? And let's just say the last decade.
When the trail pass went into effect, which was in 2014, we had not paid for new trails or new miles of trails in many years because our program just couldn't afford it, because our program is paid for by the users, mm-hmm, and not by any tax dollars.
Very nice.
So what happens is we pay $300 a mile for maintenance, grooming, signing, brushing, all of that. So it's $300 a mile. Once they hit that $300 a mile, we do have supplemental, especially for grooming, but you have to hit that $300 a mile. The whole program couldn't afford to put in more miles. with that. So do you want to know a little bit about the background of how we're funded?
Sure. Absolutely.
Okay. So we're actually funded by several things, like registration. So any snowmobile that's registered, we use that money for the program. Trail passes. So we have trail passes. We have different type of trail passes. So if you belong to a club, you get a discounted trail pass of $10. If you don't belong to a club, you pay $30 for a trail pass. And then we have out-of-state trail passes, which are $50. And the third money that comes in for our program is the gas tax. We get a little bit of gas tax per registered sled. So that's the money that we run on. So in order to have a new mile of trail, we have to have money to fund it. So when we put in the trail pass program back in 2014, we did start getting new miles of trail. So we've probably put in since 2014, a little bit over 600 miles of more funded trails.
Nice.
However, because the grooming has to come out of there, maintenance has to come out of the fund, administrative costs have to come out of the fund, infrastructure is bridges and culverts and things like that. So that all has to come out of the program. Well, one of the things that happened is in the last couple of years, as we all know, everything has gone up in price. So funding trails is the last priority, or finding more miles of trails is the last priority. So we have, like I said, funded somewhere right around 600 to 700 more miles in the last couple of years, but not very much.
Lori Heidemann joining us from the Association for Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs on WTMJ Outdoors. Let's do this. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I want to ask you about some of the things that are trending in your industry. So think about that during the break. And two, which is always the thing that I think matters to a lot of people, how do folks get a hold of you and how you've dealt with some challenging winters in Wisconsin. That's all coming up on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lori Heidemann, she represents the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs in Wisconsin. All right, so I threw you a couple questions at the end of last segment. Let's start with the easy one. How do folks find out more about your organization and snowmobiling in general?
So each county has a director and a rep, and we also have a website. You can go on our website and find out who the director or rep is for your county, and we provide a phone number on the website for them. There's also a list of clubs by county on the website, and you can pick a county, whether you live in that county or you snowmobile in that county. You can pick a county. It'll pop up with the clubs, and it'll give you names and contact information.
All right, so I talk to a lot of outdoors journalists on WTMJ Outdoors, and they always tell me about trends or things that are happening in different parts, different sectors of celebration of the great outdoors in Wisconsin and beyond. So I'm curious, the trends in your industry, the rise in the popularity of snowmobiling, what are some of the things that people are talking about with snowmobiles in the state of Wisconsin, or really beyond that, because it's popular, any state that gets snow obviously has a pretty active snowmobile culture now. What's some of the things people are talking about?
A lot of times we deal with access and the issues with access. Wisconsin, we're kind of lucky. We have landowners, so most of our trails are on private property. But like out west, it's national forest land, Bureau of Land Management land, things like that. And a lot of people don't want motorized recreation on those properties. And so access is a big issue. But we, at the association level, belong to ACSA, which is American Council of Snowmobile Associations, and they help us watch for access issues. It's one of the things that we watch very carefully, because if it happens out west, it may happen here, especially with state properties, like I said, forestry properties, Bureau of Land Management properties, things like that. If it's taken away out there, it may be taken away here in Wisconsin.
Please. You were talking about safety earlier and the training, which I think is amazing. Any other trends as far as riders' safety? I know equipment is always something that we talk about in whatever sector we're talking about in the outdoors. Anything happening there?
Every year, the manufacturers, you know, are watching, you know, with noise levels, whether it's a mountain sled or a trail sled, they watch that pretty carefully. They come to us a lot for information on what we think needs to be done and how we perceive the sport to be moving ahead. I know one of the big issues this past year is that we lost Yamaha and we lost Articat. Articat has been bought up by another company. So they're going to continue sleds, and they actually had 2026 sleds ready to go. One would think that losing those two manufacturers was a huge deal, but I think it's going to make the industry a little bit more, I don't know that we need to be competitive, but it's definitely going to help, especially with Articat being bought by another company.
Lori Heideman joining us from the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs. I have to ask you, Lori, as we sort of wrap it up on WTMJ Outdoors, the last couple winters here in Wisconsin have been challenging. Two winters ago, we basically didn't have a snowmobile season for the most part. There was a shortened season last year. Obviously, snow is the reason, or lack thereof. How has your organization and your industry sort of dealt with that challenge? Because it's obviously, I talked to resort owners, they've had to find different ways of doing things. How have you dealt with that?
Well, we continue to do what we do all the time. We promote snowmobiling, we promote safe and responsible snowmobiling, but it's really hard to, especially if we're fundraising for whether it's a program such as Snowmobile Friendly or a program such as Chaos, which is our kids program, or whatever we're working on. We still have to go to some of our resorts, some of our restaurants, and without snow and without the outpouring of funding from them, it has created challenges. One of the things that a lot of people in the north did last winter was the winter before when we had virtually no snow, is we went by side-by-sides. So we partnered up with many of the snowmobilers that also have side-by-sides or ATVs.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Instead of doing a snowmobile ride, they did ATV or UTV ride, which brought money into the resorts and the restaurants and the gas stations. Obviously, we had to find some way to help them out. And so that's one of the things that we worked on, or we partner with. Obviously, snowmobilers are also ATVers and side-by-siders. So a lot of us are dual motorized recreationists.
Are a lot of those trails shared in Wisconsin?
Some are shared and some are not. It depends. Like, I can tell you from my county, I have a lot of farmers and farm fields, and the farmers do not usually want ATV and side-by-sides on their property. So in my county, we have very few that are dual. But like Burnett County, totally both side-by-side and snowmobile, the funding works together, which is a help.
Lori Heideman from the Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs. Thanks for taking the time. And here's my hope and wish for this winter. We get a lot more snow in Wisconsin, so we don't have to agonize over the opening and closing of these trails, which is such a big part of our culture here in Wisconsin. And I wish you the best weather-wise, and I wish the best for your organization. If folks want to find out, we'll actually put the link to your organization on our WTMJ.com podcast page so that folks can find you easily if they want more information. Thank you, Lori.
Hey, you are very welcome. Think snow.
Think snow. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. I love when the listeners, fans of the show, give us ideas or suggestions on who we should talk to. This one right from the inbox, as they say. Listener suggestions. This one was, I don't remember who said it, but it was, let's talk to somebody, please, from the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. And we're going to do that today on WTMJ Outdoors. We're joined by Vice Chair of the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, Executive Committee Vice Chair, I should say, Paul Reith. I'll start with this. I'm not completely aware of what everything in your scope is as part of the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. So let's talk about what your mission is, what you do on sort of a week-to-week basis as part of the Executive Committee.
Sure. The Conservation Congress was established by statute, and we are really the advisory voice of the citizens to the Natural Resources Board and the Department of Natural Resources. So that really just, by definition, you know, has us gather feedback from people, the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, and also the users. So it can even be non-residents that utilize the state's resources as well that come with ideas to us. And we go ahead and collate those ideas, bring them together, formulate them into something that makes sense for everybody to look at and review. And then we generally take survey opinion about once a year, and we then present that to the Natural Resources Board and to the Department of Natural Resources for action.
So as somebody who serves as the vice chair on the executive committee, what are people asking you to look at, or what are they talking about in Wisconsin?
A lot of things. It's a broad range from PFAS to wake boats to white deer. It really covers the gamut of environmental and wildlife-related questions. We really were founded mostly to focus on deer and wildlife harvest and make that more sustainable and more attractive to the residents of Wisconsin and really more stable over the years. You know, in the 50s, there were some years that there wasn't even a hunt. And so really fell on the Conservation Congress to work with the community to determine how we could manage deer population better and get the public behind that, because there just aren't enough people at the DNR to manage the herd, and everybody has to get on board and do the same things. And so since then, we've done things like really champion the adoption of Blaze Orange. And right now, the focus has been a lot about wake boats, because it's a new issue, a new group of users, and figuring out how everybody can use the state's resources fairly and share with others.
The wake boat question is interesting. I had Paul Smith, outdoors editor of the Journal Sentinel from Milwaukee and the state, on the show recently talking about that wake boat issue. I know some areas of the state have sort of put in some codes and restrictions on the use of them. In your mind, as somebody who's on the Citizens Advisory Committee and Executive Committee, like what is the issue and what is the concern, and how do we, I guess, I was going to say pacify, but that's not the right word. How do we make sure that both sides are represented in that important conversation when it comes to use of our lakes?
Yeah, I think with any new technology or new user group, there's going to be friction, and we're going to have to figure out how everybody can use the state's resources responsibly. So I think it's really less about pacifying one group or the other, but more about figuring out where we can enjoy ourselves and how we can do it responsibly so that everybody can still have a great time, and that the environment is protected so that everybody can have a great time into the future. And so whether it's wake boats or, you know, the new fish finding techniques with live scopes and sonar, it's really just about making sure that things are still done fairly and that everybody can have equal enjoyment.
More of our conversation with Paul Reith from Wisconsin Conservation Congress on WTMJ Outdoors. That's next.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Paul Reith, Vice Chair of the Executive Committee of the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. One of the things that is always a concern when you're working with the governments, obviously local, state, federal, is funding. On the funding side of things, any concerns there from your perspective, any concerns from the citizenry of Wisconsin and beyond about the money that's being used for our important natural resources?
Yeah, one of the big things that's coming up for renewal that didn't make it in this year to try and get it done ahead of time is Knowles Nelson Stewardship Funding. And so that program really just allows the purchase of lands for the basic use and basic access of people in Wisconsin. It also does things like trail connectors and things like that through municipalities where there's more folks to build those bike trails out from, you know, 10 or 15 mile segments to long segments of 40 to 50 miles. And also some funds in the past have gone to help the Ice Age Trail development as well to continue to build that out within the state, which is turning into a real gem. But you know, there's a lot of concerns about that. And so we have to look at both sides of the issue. One is that, you know, a lot of those purchases have been made in the north, where land is cheaper. And obviously, you know, from a property manager point of view, hey, more acreage is more value, but necessarily it isn't as accessible to people, you know, when it gets to be 2 or 3 hours to access those properties. And the other major concern that a lot of even elected representatives have raised is just accessibility. And when we increase tourism, that maybe the funding isn't there for EMS or the services that need to support the influx of tourists to those areas. And so we need to learn and evolve. One of the big things was to start including road maintenance budgets in purchasing these properties, because otherwise, you know, after 10 years, the dirt logging roads that are there have been rutted up and they're inaccessible, and it really decreases the usefulness of the property to the public.
I guess from a public-facing perspective, do you think there's enough support in the legislature and the governor's office to allow that funding to continue in the future?
Well, it's a big bill, and you know, when we're talking about millions of dollars every year to purchase land, and that really, while it's for the public good, folks want to make sure their money is being spent well, and that we're not just buying more land to have more land and take it off the tax rolls. And that's, I think, is the bit of refinement that'll happen. And I think that's why, you know, there's support, but there's concerns. And I think we'll just have to work through those concerns over the next year to hopefully come up with a better strategy that everybody can get on board with.
We'll continue the conversation with Paul Reith from the Wisconsin Conservation Congress after this on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Continuing our conversation with Paul Reith, he's the vice chair of the executive committee of the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. Last thing, I'm always curious about where people come from and how they get into the positions that they're currently serving in. So where did you come from when it comes to natural resources, getting on the committee and getting on the Wisconsin Conservation Congress? What was your interest there, and how have you sort of manifested that in your public life now?
Sure, yeah. I found out about the Congress just in my childhood because my dad was a delegate. I grew up in Clark County near Stanley, and so he had that was his volunteerism as I was a kid when he was a high school math teacher. And I lived in Chicago. I lived in San Francisco. And one of my favorite reasons for moving back to Wisconsin is just the amount of natural resources and natural beauty that we have here. And so in, I think, 2012 or 2013, a vacancy came up in Dane County, and I really thought that this would be a great opportunity for it to be my volunteerism going into the future. And so one of the big things that I worked with my dad on before he passed, and as a delegate as well, was to champion online submissions for the spring hearings. So we got that done, and just really, you know, working on continuing to make the organization stronger and really support the things that are important to the people of Wisconsin. And so hopefully we're getting more of that done than ever.
Paul Reith, he's the vice chair of Wisconsin Conservation Congress Executive Committee. Thanks for hanging out on WTMJ Outdoors. I really appreciate your work and the fact that you're willing to share some of your expertise on the natural resources in the state of Wisconsin.
You bet. Thank you.
You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. She was actually on episode one of WTMJ Outdoors, and I thought, you know what? She was so popular. So many people talked about her. I'm bringing her back. Amelia Cagle, owner of Wheel and Sprocket, director of the retail experience, which is, you know, the forward-facing, meet-the-public sort of a job at Wheel and Sprocket, not just the owner. Amelia Cagle, welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
So happy to be back.
I love it. All right, so we talked all kinds of bike things last time, but I really want to sort of get to this. I don't know if it's new. It's not new, but the popularity, the rising popularity of e-bikes. For those who don't know what these are, and that's maybe some people out there, sort of walk through it, what's driving it, what it means for people who love to bike. Let's go through some of that stuff.
Yeah, I love to. Well, three things make an e-bike, and there's virtually every style of bike that you're used to. There's an electronic version of that. But e-bikes have a battery, they have a motor, and then they have some sort of computer display. And for a long time, you know, it's really been something that was new and exciting, but now it's just like you see so many more people on the bike path on electric bikes. And what we love about it is it legitimately, you go, you ride your bike more. So instead of just that like random nice summer weekend, like all of a sudden people are riding like to the beer garden on a Tuesday. And then longer distances. So instead of that like 5-10 mile ride, you see all these people doing like 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 miles on an e-bike. It's really changing the game.
I saw some friends of mine just posted on Facebook. They just got e-bikes, and they were talking about long rides that they weren't able to do before. They're like my age, mid-60s, and they said now the e-bikes sort of transform that experience for them. That's sort of one part of that market that's really people are looking to get out, and this is an easier way for them to sort of do the things they've always wanted to do.
I love it. You know, I love that people are tailoring their vacations now around their electric bikes. So, like, people are, like, checking out all these rails-to-trails things that have, like, 40 or 50 miles at a single go in the different states surrounding us, and they're packing up, and they're having these weekends of fun, and I'm loving it. It's, like, such a cool way of seeing the world, because, like, you go slow enough to see everything around you, but then fast enough to go. Like, you know, if you wanted to go 50 miles in a day, like, good luck running or hiking that, you know? You can really travel some ground.
And the thing about, at least that what I know about e-bikes is sort of you tailor your own experience. If you need a lot of help, you can do that. If you don't, just need a little assist up the hills. That's sort of the cool thing about it.
Totally. It eats headwinds and hills for breakfast. So gotta love that. And then you're totally right. Like some days, like I use an e-bike to commute to work. All right. And also to pull the barley for my 3-year-old like child. But some days, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm feeling really good. I'm going to throw the assistance on low. But then there's other days where it's like hilly or I just haven't slept well. And then I make the bike do the work. All right. And then I'm still on my bike and commuting, which feels good every time.
Yeah. And having spent the weekend outdoors this weekend, I was like, it's just getting outdoors is the whole thing. I know there's always new innovations in biking and bikes, but some of the trends that you're seeing now in e-bikes, what are those all about?
Well, we are really excited. So can you buy an electric bike on the internet for $1,000? Like, sure. But then we always ask yourself, like, who's going to fix it when it breaks? All right. And a lot of bike shops actually aren't certified. And like a lot of that stuff doesn't have the insurance for bike shops to work on it. But now, like Trek and Electra, which are our two favorite brands, we have a throttle bike for the first time in like the e-bike history. So a throttle allows you to not have to pedal to get that first couple of strokes, which is like so nice. Again, like say you have a hip problem or a knee problem. It's a really nice feature for us to be able to, you know, go on cruise for a little bit, but then do that traditional pedal assist, which is like literally not like a motorcycle that moves underneath you. You have to pedal to engage the motor. You're still given the oomph. You just get to decide how much oomph you want.
Do you know what the popularity is? If you look at traditional, 10-speed bikes or now 15, 20-speed bikes versus e-bikes, what the percentage is?
Yeah, you know, it's about 30% of the volume of what we're doing at Wheel and Sprocket.
Wow.
And, you know, I was like, what was it? Maybe 6 or 8 years ago, I was in Europe and I was snooping around bike shops. And, Steve, it was interesting to me because more than half the floor of all their bicycle shops were all electric bikes. And I was like, man, is that ever going to happen? And now in our Chicagoland stores, we're doing that. Like, literally, the popularity is there. There's only so much summertime. If you could ditch your car all summer and get on your bike, Like these things, like we've always known bikes could be transportation, not just recreation. But now all of a sudden with e-bikes, it's like a real alternative. And like if you're conscious of like, you know, showing up sweaty to work, like this is a way that you can be outside, enjoy nature, not be stuck in a traffic jam, and still get to work and looking good.
All right, I'm going to give a chance to tell people where they can find Wheel and Sprocket and your great stores and everything else you do there. But if someone is thinking about getting an e-bike for the first time, somebody who's been traditionally just riding a bike of the regular sort, as I put it, what should they be looking for?
Well, so come to a bike shop, all right? So we know that this is a big purchase. You know, a really good e-bike, you know, starts at about $2,000 and up. So we want you to test ride them. We want to tell you all about them. You know, there's a lot of bike shops that maybe like poo-poo on e-bikes, to be honest. And like Wheel and Sprocket is not that. We believe in bikes for everyone. E-bikes are changing the game. We love e-bikes and we're your e-bike expert.
All right. So how do folks find out about Wheel and Sprocket?
Oh, just go on the good old internet, wheelandsprocket.com. And yeah, there's five in the Milwaukee metro locations. And then we also have some in the Madison, Appleton, Chicago land market too.
Look at you guys spreading out all over the place. Spreading the wings.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna have Amelia stick around for a second segment because I want to hear her story, how she got involved, all this stuff. You're listening, of course, to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Steve Scavitti talking to Amelia Cagle, owner at Wheel and Sprocket, also director of retail experience. I'm always curious about people's story. So you're still a youngster. I met you at a recent bike event. So how did you get involved in all of this bike stuff?
Well, Steve, born into it. Baby in a bike shop scenario.
A Nepo baby?
actual baby, you know. When your parents own the shop, you know, they don't actually have to pay you, so you can just be there as extra help.
You just have to work.
Yeah, you know, I've got two older brothers and a little sister, and we've all been heavily involved in the businesses. You know, we also have an original family business, which just turned 100 years old, called Kegel's Inn in West Dallas.
I've been there.
A great fish fry, if you've never been.
Yeah, very cool place. If you've never been there, go check it out. And their fish fries and their food in general are amazing, and it's a great setting.
Yeah. I'm really so proud of my brother Julian and his wife Stephanie. They're incredible. And then Noel, Tessa, and I are living on our father's legacy. So Sprocket started in 1973 in good old Hales Corners, Wisconsin, and is really like, you know, a like American success small business story. But yeah, it started small and then expanded in my dad's career of, you know, whatever, 35 years. He was able to open 7 different locations. We're now at 10 stores, and we really truly believe, like, honestly, where Wheel and Sprocket is, the bike community gets better, and then if you live in a more bike-friendly community, that just becomes a better community to live in. So that's kind of our big reason why. We really think that, like, bikes, like, help make the world a better place.
Personally, what does it do for you?
Oh my gosh, have you ever been on a bike and feel like you're flying?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was funny. Our dad, to pay for our college tuitions, always joked when we were growing up that we'd have to ride our bikes to college, and then that became true. So, you know, our mom would drive the Wheel and Sprocket van. We would all, like, rally up, and, you know, you think, like, if we were in Milwaukee, we'd go to UWM or maybe Madison, but my eldest brother went to school in Montreal, Canada. I went to school in Vancouver, British Columbia. We cheated a little bit because that was going to be a really long ride. But, you know, really our family, like, was instilled, like, every vacation we took was a bike vacation. And the more time you spend on your bike, the better you feel about yourself. So there's something to see in the world on the seat of a bicycle. And right after college, I took the best trip of my life, which I rode from Portland, Oregon to Boston, Massachusetts. And
that's wow. How long did that take?
It was 60 days, 60 miles a day with 12 of my buddies and my good old dad and sister. And that was, you know, again, like I don't know, humans are like made to migrate, and like moving every day is not something we always get to do. But that was the biggest treat of my life, best trip of my life for sure.
What was the experience like? I mean, you're obviously going through a lot of different places, a lot of towns, a lot of highways and stuff.
Yeah, we took a, you know, not a secondary highway, but a tertiary highway called Highway 12 right across the north side of North America, and it was just absolutely beautiful.
That's
Montana
amazing.
Felt like it took 3 weeks to get to. That's a long state, but yeah, you guys, like, honestly, I know a lot of people can't do this, but if you ever find yourself with free time, a bike commute, a long-distance bike commute, even if you get a weekend, it's just there's something to it that's good for the soul.
You know, funny aside, I used to joke with my wife that I wanted to ride a horse across America at some point. Then she,
then I
realized, Amelia, I've never ridden a horse in my entire life, so probably not a good idea.
I don't know if you're trained, Steve. It sounds awesome to me.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, people used to do that. There's something in that, like, American dream in there that I just, I don't know.
That's what I was thinking. All right, so I wanted to ask, I was talking to a couple of business owners on previous episodes about how the pandemic changed their business. Did the pandemic have a positive influence on Wheel and Sprocket?
Well, you know, business is so cyclical, right? So, like, obviously, we had, during COVID, there was the biggest bike boom I've ever seen, or, like, really any of the industry has seen. And I guess if the goal was selling all the bikes, we did that. We sold, like, literally every bike in this company. Getting the replacements for those bikes has really taken years to get that inventory under control. But, Steve, like, I wake up every day and I think, do people really need more bikes? And then every single day we sell so many bikes. So we met at that Bike Expo sale back in April and we sold 1,300 bikes to Milwaukee Market in 3 days. So, yeah, bikes are getting better and better. And I think the trails and the infrastructure and the places to ride are getting better and better all the time. And there's just something to the simple joy of riding a bike. Like, it really, it's the best.
All right.
So fun.
Yeah, hop on. Any upcoming events that you want to tell us about? We'll certainly give you a chance to talk about your great stores.
Yeah, you know, we Wheel and Sprocket does a lot in used bikes as well, so we don't just do new bikes. And we have traveling tent sales at all of our stores. So if you're looking for a high-quality bike at a lower price, a used bike is a good way to get into that. We're very different than a yard sale. Like, all the bikes have been completely refurbished and are guaranteed by our service guys. So it is great. And then, of course, there's still so many great bike rides left in the season. This weekend, the LLS is putting on the Scenic Shore Ride, which goes from Mequon up to Sturgeon Bay. That's a fan favorite. We get 1,200 people on the lakeshore for 2 days. That's a fun one.
Very cool.
But we have a calendar of events on the website. So if you're ever looking for something to do or people to ride with,
all right, one more time on that website address.
Wheelandsprocket.com.
I think you're the only person that's sung twice on the show as well. Amelia Cagle, owner, Wheel and Sprocket, also director of retail experience. She's really good at her job, and she obviously can tell by the excitement she brings to biking and all things cycling around the state of Wisconsin and beyond, including across the country. Great story there as well. Thanks, Amelia.
No problem. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Great show today. We were joined by Lori Heidemann, Association of Wisconsin Snowmobile Clubs, hoping for more snow this winter. Hope she gets it, and all those snowmobilers out there as well. Paul Reith joined us from the Wisconsin Conservation Congress. He represents the executive committee on concerns for 25 and 26 and the great work they're doing in the state of Wisconsin. And we wrapped it up with Amelia Cagle. You know her from Wheel and Sprocket. She's director of retail experience, talking all things biking and cycling in the state of Wisconsin and beyond. Told a great story about traveling the country on a bike. As always, you can find us at WTMJ.com, the podcast page, wherever you get your podcasts, or listen live on Saturdays. This has been WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.